Hello and welcome to A Bookish Home. I'm your host, Laura Zara-Klopinski, librarian and all-around bookworm. And with me today is the wonderful kidlit author, Kelly Yang. Kelly Yang is the New York Times bestselling author of the middle grade novel Front Desk and its new sequel, Three Keys, as well as a young adult novel, Parachutes. Front Desk won the 2019 Asian Pacific American Award for Literature and was chosen a Best Book of the Year by multiple organizations including NPR, The Washington Post, and the New York Public Library. Kelly's family immigrated to the United States from China, and she grew up in California in circumstances very similar to those of Mia Tang in the Front Desk books. She went to college at 13, eventually graduating from UC Berkeley and Harvard Law School. She's the founder of the Kelly Yang Project, a leading writing and debating program for children in Asia and the United States. Kelly has three children and splits her time between Hong Kong and San Francisco, California. Kelly Yang, welcome to A Bookish Home. I am such a huge fan of your book, and I'm pinching myself that I get to talk books and writing with you today. So thank you for coming on.
Thanks so much for having me. Such a pleasure.
Well, like so many readers, I was over the moon when I found out we were going to get to hear from Mia Tang again in this new sequel to Front Desk. Can you tell listeners a little bit about Mia's story and about this new sequel?
Yes. So in Three Keys, the sequel to Front Desk, we pick up right where we left off at the end of book one. So Mia is running the motel, which she now owns with her parents, her and their immigrant friends, the Weeklies, including Hank, and her best friend Lupe. And she's never had a best friend before, so this is very exciting for Mia. She's finally in a school long enough to make a best friend and have this amazing relationship. But it's kind of a troubling time in California. There's an election. It's a really critically important election because there's a new law that's on the ballot called Proposition 187. And it's an actual real law that that happened when I was a kid, which basically said that if it passed, any undocumented immigrant children would not be allowed to go to school, would not be allowed to go to public school, would not be able to access health care. Even if they were sick, they couldn't go to the hospital. So this is a very important law that sort of threatens to, jeopardize everything that Mia's worked hard for, everything that she cares about, all the friends and family that she has around her. And so she has to find the three keys of friendship and the three keys of allyship and actually learn how to stand up for what's right and use her voice and use her pen, which she's really, really getting good at, is using her pen and using her voice. It's a delightful book, but it's historical, but it's very relevant today.
Yes, it's so relevant. And one of the things I love most about Mia is that strength and her standing up for the people she loves and, for what she believes in. She's such a great character. And, I know that we kind of, I think you even find out on the back cover that it's somewhat based on your own experience growing up and that it's a little bit semi-autobiographical. And I love stories like that. And I love thinking about, what's pulled from real life and what's fiction. So I really like that aspect of the books. And it got me wondering, had you always thought about writing about your childhood or kind of what made you want to write Mia's story and kind of come up with that character?
Yeah, it's a really good question. So I grew up managing the front desk of three different motels all over Southern California from when I was 8 years old to when I was 12 with my parents. And I always thought it was a kind of a strange childhood. I never saw anything like it portrayed in books or in movies. So I always grew up wanting to hide it, to keep it a secret, because I was kind of ashamed of it. I thought it was not normal. And, you're supposed to live in a house. You're not supposed to live in a motel. You're not supposed to check out rooms to strangers all day long. But when I grew up and I went to college, I started learning more about just, owning your own narrative and not being ashamed of it, and that there are many American narratives. There's not just one. And so when I had kids, and really when my son, my oldest son, became 8 years old, I think it was around 7 or 8, I started thinking, I can't just not tell him about the way I grew up. It was so different from the way he was growing up. But I didn't know how to say the words. I didn't know how to tell him because I didn't want him to just hear the story and think it was Oh, just that's such a hard and like sad time. 'Cause it wasn't. It was also joyful and funny. It was hilarious. It was one of the most hilarious times of my life. And so I thought in order to tell him, I needed to tell him the whole story and I needed to write all of these emotions into a story. And that's really what happened. And that summer, it was the summer of, I think, 2015, I think, where I wrote the story of Front Desk, also to get him to read because he wasn't really reading, but really to tell him about the way I grew up. And so every day I would write a chapter and we would read it together at night. And he got so into it. He got so into it that by the end of the summer, he was like, "You have to do something with that story."
Oh,
And that's what happened.
that's such a wonderful story. And, it made me think as you were saying all that, in kind of serving your son as a reader, it's so wonderful that that turned into a book that has spoken to so many readers of all ages. And just what you're saying too about it, like really showing the whole story, because I think as readers are walking in Mia's shoes, it's like there is so much, joy in the experience. And one of the things I love is just that there's such a strong sense of community at the motel, and she has so many different people looking out for her, and she really has a family there, a unique kind of family there, which I
Absolutely.
love. And yet at the same time, I think showing, the different struggles that her family faces. And yeah, I just think it's such a powerful, powerful story, and what a cool way for it to kind of have come into the world.
Absolutely. So I was going to say that, what's one of the things that's really amazing about Front Desk is since the book's been published, I've gone around to so many different schools all over the nation, all over the world, really. And I've had kids come up and, give me little notes and just stick them in my purse or sometimes in my pocket. And the notes just say something like, they say stuff like, because of Front Desk, I finally told somebody at school that my parents work in a restaurant or my parents work in a grocery store or my parents, and it's amazing because for the first time ever, they're seeing themselves in a book and they're seeing that their narrative matters, that they're, that that is normal, that these are all part of the American dream and the American experience.
I love that so much. And I feel like it's one of the things that I think is the most special about children's books, because I feel like when a child has that experience in particular of like really seeing themselves in a book, I just think that's so powerful. And I keep thinking one of this like haunts me a little bit, but I loved the Front Desk so much when I read it, and I went right out and ordered a bunch of copies of the book for my school library. And then I ended up like going out on a leave and I never ended up going back to that school library. And I'm like, oh, they have like five books. I hope they ended up doing a book club. And that's one that I'm like, it's still on my list. I need to do like a book club or a parent child book club with these books. And I just love them so much. And I feel like, yeah, it must be so fun to get to hear all the kids reacting to it. And
It's
what's,
really rewarding.
yeah, that's great. Well, especially because you're sort of weaving together fiction and your own memories and everything, I was curious sort of what the most challenging part of writing the books was.
So, yeah, I think that you're right. I think that's a really, you hit it on the nose. The most challenging part, I think, is capturing the authenticity of the emotions, really capturing the emotions of the experience, but then letting your imagination sort of take them, and you can weave in character arcs and fiction, and you can put in really amazing, new settings or new characters. So really the marriage between reality, what it was re really like in real life going through that experience, and your imagination. It's one of the things I enjoy as an artist. I love that. And one of my biggest goal with every book is if I can capture the emotions right, then I've done my job. So I don't worry so much about getting all the details exactly right in terms of like this really happened exactly this way. But I want to capture the emotions. So I think that's the most challenging part, but it was also the most rewarding part for me.
I think that's so interesting. And I think I read somewhere, I was looking at a list, maybe on your website, of some of your favorite books, and it was making me think, I think Louisa May Alcott was on there, and it just got me thinking like, oh, I feel like it was probably a similar process. Like I know at least Little Women was semi-autobiographical, and I feel like that it's very similar, like
I feel like it was capturing like some of the emotions and memories and experiences of that time, but like also fictionalizing it. And just these portrayals of childhood.
And going back to that time, you know, being able to tap into what it's like to be a 10-year-old or an 11-year-old again, one of the things that helped me was I was a writing teacher for 15 years and I taught all ages. Probably my youngest kids were like 6 years old, but I taught all the way through high school. But I remember working a lot with middle graders, you know, like 10-year-olds, 12-year-olds, and just looking at the world through their eyes was so wonderful. You know, it's so different from the way adults look at the world in a really authentic and beautiful way. You know, they still have that innocence, but they're starting to understand things. And that's one of the things that I do in Front Desk and in Three Keys is starting to understand harder things like what is racism? You know, what is poverty? Like, what is it like to face these microaggressions at school? What is it like to have parents who don't understand what you're going through at school, but they're giving you a different set of pressure at home? And trying to reconcile those are very hard things, but kids go through them, but still maintaining all that innocence and wide-eyed like wonder that they use to look at the world. They need that.
Yeah. And I think because the as a reader, you're seeing everything from so close up, like through Mia's eyes, like as you're talking about you know, her experience and the different characters with microaggressions, I thought this would just make for such good conversation in a classroom, because I feel like, you know, there's one thing sort of reading about descriptions in a textbook or something or getting sort of explained to you, but it's another to really be living it through a character's shoes or like seeing your own experiences kind of mirrored, like, oh, someone else has gone through that too. And even I was really wondering how things were going to turn out. I don't want to give anything away with her teacher in Three Keys. Because that was definitely, giving some really red flags at the beginning. Yes.
that was really interesting. It was a really interesting theme and part of the story. I think it was, for me, it was really rewarding to write that.
Well, I wonder too, sort of, I'm always curious, sort of on that path toward from writing the draft to getting published. Did it take you a long time to sort of get an agent and get published once you had kind of spent that summer writing?
Well, it's actually a good question. For me, I'm a pretty fast drafter, but I take many, many drafts. So the good news is I can get a draft done. But I most likely have to rewrite it many times. It's just a fact of my life, my process or whatever. and I'm not getting better, which is the really annoying part. It's like, darn it, I still have to do this over and over again. But I think one of the good things about it is that you do get to spend a lot of time with your characters. But the path to publication was a hard one for me. You know, getting an agent was not that hard. I got an agent straight away. I think, you know, I queried and it was some crazy situation where like 24 hours later I had an offer. But then from there, you know, Front Desk was rejected by every single publisher except Scholastic. And it was really Cheryl Klein, who now works at Lee & Low, but she was at the time working at for Arthur Levine at Scholastic. She just took a huge interest in it. It became her baby, her passion project. And I remember she read it, like something like 48 hours after, submission. And we got on the phone like 48 hours later. And she told me that I needed to change everything except for like two or three scenes that were really good. But then she said that those two or three scenes were so good that if I can make the rest of the book like that, it'll really be amazing. And that was because the first draft that I wrote was very different from the Front Desk that you'll read today. The first draft was much more like Diary of a Wimpy Kid. It was designed to get my son to read, you know, so very funny about all these guests, a lot of like different, you know, little shenanigans that they'd get into and just fun things for kids. And it was hilarious. But the heart of the book, you could see it through two or three scenes. And I think it was the pencil scene. I think it was the lake, and I don't know, a couple different scenes that are still in the book, the final version. And I went and I said, you know what? She's right. She's like, and it was very much like in Little Women. She was like, there's a fantastic story here. If you have the courage to write it, you know, if you have the courage to take all that pain and all that joy, and don't just give me these two or three scenes, you know, stuck in the middle of a silly book, but give it to me. I want the whole book to be like that. And she was totally, totally right. And I went back and I rewrote it. And then I submitted it and she bought it. And then the election happened. This is the 2016 election. And I was very, you know, I was a mess. I was very upset. And, you know, all these feelings, the intensity of those feelings just grew in my mind, how important it was to have this immigrant experience, you know, captured on the page and really move people. It just, the stakes became higher for me to get this right. So I told Cheryl, I'm going to go back and rewrite it again. And then I rewrote it for now. This is like the third or fourth time. I can't even remember. And right before I turned it into her, she left her job and she moved to another publishing house. So, I mean, I remember those 2 weeks going, oh my God, like here I have rewritten something that had already been bought and nobody has read this new draft. Nobody has.
Oh, gosh.
Idea. And, you know, just feeling like, what have I done? But luckily the new draft, which is the current front desk, the iteration it is now, was beloved by the whole team.
That is so fascinating. And I so admire Cheryl Klein as an editor. She's been on the podcast before and I had seen her from afar many times. I worked at Scholastic for a little while and would sort of even then just admired her. And so it's just so interesting to see. Oh, she's wonderful. And just to see her sort of kind of be a cheerleader for the book in that way. And just what a, that's such a nice testament to sort of the editor relationship, even though I know she ended up moving on, but that's so interesting that's sort of how it all unfolded. You were saying sort of how you do lots and lots of drafts. And I was kind of wondering what your writing routine is like now. And I know sort of everything is kind of crazy right now. And I know you have three kids as well. So what is writing like these days?
Writing. Okay. So basically I'm probably lucky if I can write for, you know, even like 3 hours a day or four hours. I used to be able to write for, since like from 9 o'clock in the morning all the way to like five. So it's definitely cut down on my productivity a little bit. But my writing routine has always been the same since I was a kid, which is just get up and write, you know, if you want to be a writer, get up and write. It's really easy. You just sit in front of your computer and start typing. knowing that a lot of what you write is going to be thrown away, but that's okay. You know, it's the mining for the pivotal scenes, the pivotal moments. It's that mining process, that's going to get you the gold in the end. And that's what writing is. You know, it's not like for me anyway, it isn't, I know we always have these romantic notions of writers, like, you know, taking long strolls and waiting for inspiration to strike. And in reality, it just isn't like that. You just don't have time. You know, I wish it could be like that. But it's funny how, you know, it's changed. And now it really is sort of like you have to put in the time and you have to put in the work to get the result, or it's not going to work.
Yeah. And that's such a great metaphor too, the mining and just kind of sifting through and see what you get. Well, you know, I think a lot about, you know, what does it mean to help raise readers and writers? And I was sort of wondering, what your thoughts are on that. I mean, I guess we could write our own books. I don't know if I would be able to write a great children's book to get my kids excited about reading like you did. But do you have any thoughts on kind of what's important when it comes to raising readers and writers?
Yeah, I think that one of the most important things is that we enjoy the process. You know, the the best thing we can do is have our kids love something for the sake of doing it. And I think one of the problems with writing is people always think, oh, as soon as I write something, someone's going to judge me. They're going to say it's bad, or they're going to say, you know, they're going to give me a grade. And that was very much the case when I was a kid as well. It was just being a little bit afraid to touch the page, because I was always worried this was going to be like a B minus or maybe a B plus if I'm lucky, you know, just constantly worried about that. So if we could just take that away a little bit, and, you know, I tell my kids all the time, just go and write for fun. You know, I don't even have to read it. You don't, yeah. You never have to show it to me, you know, go and write, like, as long as they enjoy the process, first of all, they'll get better at it, but it'll become something for them, which is, you know, writing is therapeutic. That's why I do it. I don't know any other way to, like, process the world. You know, I guess I could garden or something, but I haven't tried other things. But, you know, if we can sort of introduce, and same thing with reading, it's not constantly judging and saying, oh, that's not a book for your age, or that's, yes, you know, that's too babyish for you, or what are you doing with that book? You know, and you'd be amazed at how much judging goes into both reading and writing. There's so much judging involved from everywhere. Everywhere you go, there's always somebody who's going to say something about the book that your kid is reading. So as much as we as parents can protect this process, it'll make it so much better if we want to really raise lifelong readers and writers.
I totally agree. I feel like even from being sort of at the elementary school level, just seeing so much academic pressure put on kids, or worries about, you know, oh, I can't take that out of the library, it's not at the right reading level and all of that. It's like, no, just, you know, let's help you love reading and as you're saying, love writing and do it for fun and do it for enjoyment. And yeah, I think that's really helpful advice. Well, the other thing I really loved, so I've also been reading your young adult book, Parachutes. I'm seeing sort of the different debate scenes and everything, and it got me wondering about the Kelly Yang project that you started. I'm a former debate team nerd, so this got me excited that it has a debate component to it. Could you tell us about that?
Yeah, so I was living in Hong Kong for a really long time, pretty much since I finished law school all the way to recently, really. And when I was there, I didn't want to be a lawyer anymore. I've always loved writing. I'd always loved teaching kids. I was a debate coach in college. And so I thought it'd be great to combine the two loves and try something new. So I started teaching kids in Hong Kong how to write, specifically how to do creative writing, which a lot of them had never done before. Critical thinking, critical writing, essay writing, and really trying to get them to hone their voice, but also just to find their voice and use it. So I taught a lot of writing, I also taught a lot of debating. I'm also a big debater and I love debate. So I wanted to start something that would harness all that, and it grew. There were many, many teachers. It still goes on today. There are many teachers involved. I think they do a lot of stuff online now because of the pandemic. But you know, it was so amazing every weekend to teach kids, and the day would just fly by. You know, we went and so many of those kids, I think really made a big difference in terms of my own writing, because I don't think I'd be able to capture the kid experience if I hadn't had those 15 years in the classroom. And they were hard, you know, it was very hard. As any teacher would know, it's not always easy to teach kids. There are highs and lows, and, you know, it's challenging. It was such an amazing experience.
That's wonderful. And yeah, I feel like I didn't really know before that you'd had the writing teacher experience, but it always strikes me when I talk to an author who I then find out has that, like, classroom experience or lots of experience around kids. It's like, oh, that's why, like, these characters feel so authentic, or like the classroom scenes feel so authentic. Like, it just, I feel like you can tell, that just comes through so well. Well, you know, I just love to hear about, authors as readers. What are some of the books that really meant a lot to you growing up? And then could you also share some of the books you've been reading lately?
So growing up, I read a lot of Babysitter's Club. This was the only book that
Yes.
I, yeah, so it was the only book where I saw a, there was an Asian American, Claudia, whose life was very different from mine, but she looked like me, and I just got such a thrill from, looking at the covers, reading the books, reading, we can never afford to buy them, but I would always run to the library as soon as they came out and get the latest one. And I think that, the Boxcar Children, a lot, I was actually really into series, believe it or not. But like consumed, Little Women and I think The Tree Grows in Brooklyn was probably the first book where I saw poverty portrayed on the page. That was really amazing and just so it was wonderful to read that. I am reading, let's see, I'm reading Grown by Tiffany Jackson. I'm a huge Tiffany Jackson fan. And I'm reading Other Words for Home because I'm doing a panel with Jasmine, and it's amazing. It's a really amazing book.
I need to read that one. They just did a teen book club for that at the public library I work at now, and I keep seeing it. I'm like, I got it. I have to get my hands on that one. That looks so great.
Oh, it's so
Looks really
great. It's so
interesting.
great.
Yeah.
And I have it's
Well,
from
it's.
Mr. Shu. Mr. Shu, and there's I'm looking at it now. It says, "To Kelly from John Shu, I love this book with my whole heart."
Oh,
Aww.
that's so nice. Well, it's funny that you mentioned the Babysitter's Club because I of course was also a huge fan and devoured them all, but it just struck me how that was, if that was such a big series for you, was it meaningful, extra meaningful that Front Desk and Three Keys wound up being published by Scholastic, like the Babysitter's Club?
Oh, so meaningful. And I remember the first time going into the Scholastic offices, just I was really nervous and but then just knowing that all my favorite authors have been, in this building at some point or another, it really made me feel like I was home.
So cool. That's so cool. Well, congrats on the books. I just feel like they should be in every child's hand. They're so fantastic, and I hope any parents or librarians or teachers who are listening will stock their homes and libraries with Three Keys and Front Desk, and also check out Parachutes. And I will link to all the books that we mentioned. And when I post to I could link to any other like virtual events or things you have coming up. Would those be on your website?
They're usually on my website, although I don't always have time to update everything, but you can always follow me on Twitter. I'll always announce when there's another event. I know we're trying to do a lot of stuff with like amazing posters where, we have Mia and it says stand up for what's right. But yeah, I think it's amazing to be able to reach readers and librarians and kids virtually, even in this time, we need to connect and come together as a community.
Yes, definitely. And those posters sound fantastic. Well, thank you for bringing Mia into our lives. And oh, and actually, I meant to ask, will we see any more Mia Tang, or is the sequel sort of the end?
I am not allowed to say, but I will say that I would love to spend more time at the Cala Vista Motel. I will always love that.
As would your readers. Well, thank you so much, Kelly. Have a good rest of the day, and I hope to read more from you soon.
Thank you so much, Laura. It's been so great talking to you.
For links to all of the books mentioned on this week's episode, you can visit abookishhome.com, and there you'll also find a link to our new online bookshop. A Bookish Home has teamed up with the new organization bookshop.org, which supports independent bookstores. And if you'd like, you can browse books by authors who have been guests on A Bookish Home. I'm also sharing there all the books mentioned on the podcast, books I've been reading lately, and other recommendations. It's a really wonderful site to browse and look through books. And if you make a purchase, it supports A Bookish Home and independent bookstores. So it's a win-win. So if you want to check that out directly, it's bookshop.org/shop/abookishhome. And you'll also find that at abookishhome.com. If you are enjoying the show, I hope you take a minute to subscribe and also rate and review in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you enjoyed this episode, I would encourage you to share it on social media to help other people find the show and this episode. Thanks for listening, everyone, and happy reading.